Hey there. Welcome back to the 2% Solution Podcast, where we uncover the small changes that make huge ripples in our lives. Today, I'm thrilled to have Lisa Franz with us, a maverick in the world of nutrition and lifestyle transformation. Lisa's not your average nutrition coach. After breaking free from the chains of restrictive diets and embracing a flexible eating lifestyle, she turned her life around and now helps others do the exact same thing. Imagine living a life where food is your friend, not the enemy, and your lifestyle knows no bounds. Lisa is here to show us how. If you're ready to challenge the status quo and explore a life beyond limits, you're in for a treat. Let's dive in and discover the freedom that awaits with Lisa Franz. Lisa, welcome to the 2% Solution Podcast.
I am super excited to be here. You were on my podcast just a few weeks ago, and I think we had a great conversation, so I'm excited to pick it up today.
I know, right? And it's kind of fun because you're in the hot seat now. I'm in the cold seat. Or I guess I should say I'm in the driver's seat and you're in the passenger seat, right? But I'm going to get you to do all the work today, all right?
Yes.
But, you know, it was such a great conversation on your podcast. It was nice to be able to continue it because I know when it comes to nutrition and healthy living and fitness, and I'm really just getting out of your own way when it comes to getting that mental shift to really prioritize health as a non-negotiable, you're living that. And so I'm excited today for us to dive in and me pick your brain, but also give the audience some insights into how you got to where you are today. Because it's not like it was a straight line, right?
Oh, no.
So I've got a good question to kick things off. You know, tell you what, can you share about the pivotal moment when you decided to shift towards flexible dieting and how it ultimately led to, you know, your lifestyle now, which is location free? Because I think that's a great way for us to kick off.
Absolutely. Yes. So actually the two outcomes in terms of me being location free and shifting towards flexible dieting are not necessarily the same pivotal moment. So in terms of nutrition, it had come from years of restrictive dieting where I was trying to figure out what works for me, low carb, low fat, paleo, whatever, and just being super frustrated and like literally thinking this cannot be it. There has to be an easier way that allows me to enjoy life more than depriving myself or than being restricted. I remember standing in it was in Thailand in the middle of a mall, and I started crying because I thought there is nothing I could eat because everything had rice in it or this had processed oils. And I think nowadays, like if we look at all the different diets, at the end of it, we're like, what the heck can I eat? I can't even drink water because technically there is, you know, whatever the heck you think in that water. So I was so frustrated and like enjoying life is just, I mean, of course, everyone wants to enjoy life. But for me, it's like at the core of my being, I need to be somewhat fulfilled. And so then when I read an article, which was titled How Donuts Gave Me Abs and a, I think it was like 90 kg snatch, which is the lift in Olympic lifting. I was like, whoa, I want all of these things. I want donut, I want abs, and I want the 90 kg snatch. So I read through it, and this athlete, her name is Nicole Caperzo. She was a CrossFit athlete. She was basically saying how by shifting from just focusing on whole foods and trying to eat quote unquote clean, and then shifting towards flexible dieting, she achieved all these things. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I was so frustrated, I'm just going to give this a go. And needless to say, years later, I'm still basically practicing the same principles in the sense of, you know, having a good idea of what calories are, having a good idea of what's carbs, what's protein, what's fats, etc. And now I'm helping my own clients to live a more flexible, freer life through that. Now, when it comes to the location freedom, I guess that happened a little bit later, although it was probably a built up in the years prior to. So I have actually come from a place of working shift work in the police in New Zealand when I was living in New Zealand. And it was never really my passion or anything like that. It was more just, oh, what could I do? What's like a stable job, you know, where you think you need to look at security and whatever. And so I got into the police, even though I studied exercise science prior to that. But I just thought, oh, this is a very unpredictable industry. So I'm better off in the police. And this whole shift work thing didn't just do a number on my physical body, but also mentally for my relationships, for everything. And I was just like, I need to get out of this. I knew that. I knew that at the core of my being. And so I thought, okay, I need to transition back into something that I'm actually passionate about, which has always been training and nutrition. But how can I make that more flexible? So I thought about online personal training, et cetera, and eventually just realized that nutrition is my true passion and got into that. But out of both of these things, I think I can take and can say that I've realized freedom is one of my highest values for sure. And that expands into every area of my life, but very much so when it comes to travel, when it comes to nutrition, when it comes to creating my own hours. And now I've been able to melt those two together, and it's just bliss.
Oh, I love it. You know, I can attest to that bliss that you were explaining, because, you know, for 5 years, a lot of people know that my family and I traveled full time, and 2.5 years we lived in Bali, you know, and it was just a wonderful time in our lives. And we look forward to getting back to traveling, but the kids are in university now, so it's a little bit less conducive. So I get to live vicariously through your Instagram posts. Thank you. And and I got to say, for everyone that's listening or watching, like, if you have an opportunity, you got to connect with Lisa on social. She just does such wonderful work, great information, wonderful content, but also tells a great story. And so I invite you to definitely check her out. And don't forget the show notes. We've got links to all that. So thank you for mentioning that. And I know just a second ago when we talked about flexible dieting, because I'm sure there's people thinking, well, what is flexible dieting? You know, and so I'm sort of two parts here, but let's start with the flexible dieting. Can you just give us a basic understanding? What does flexible dieting even mean?
So at the core of it, flexible dieting means that technically no food group, food item, or anything like that is off limits, as long as you're not allergic to it or anything like that. As long as you are able to work it into your calorie budget. Of course, we want to make sure that food quality is still there. So nowadays, I do, you know, practice and recommend still aiming for about 80% whole food, but having those 10, 20% for something that you truly enjoy. So it could be, for me, I was terrified of carbs. I thought, you know, just eating bread or even fruit, I thought just there was something inherently bad about that. That was my core belief, really. And it took a while for me to realize that it's all just numbers and energy in the end. So flexible dieting basically goes by that, in the sense of, if you eat as many calories as your body burns, you're going to maintain weight. If you eat more than that, you're going to gain weight, whether that's muscle or fat, depends on your lifestyle and, you know, and if you eat less than that, you're going to lose fat or muscle, ideally just fat. So that's basically it. Now the distinct distribution of those calories towards carbs, protein, or fats also makes a bit of a difference, especially when it comes to protein, because if we eat the right amount of protein, and most people, if we just eat quote unquote intuitively or what the traditional Western diet is like, we're going to be most likely not eating enough protein. And that often leads to the fact that we're not satiated enough, that we have higher cravings, that we lose more weight from lean body mass as well if we're trying to lose weight. Or, of course, if we're trying to build muscle, that we're not building quite as much muscle. I mean, we might be more sore than necessary if we don't eat enough protein. It has also been linked to some mental health issues, etc. So that's really the most important macro. And then by fine-tuning carbs and fats, we can nudge that even more into an optimization. So in the sense of the right amount of fats helping our hormones, the right amount of carbs potentially helping our training even better, especially if we're doing kind of like explosive work or CrossFit or anything high intensity, etc. So yeah, that's basically the crux of it.
I think that was a great explanation, I have to say. You know, I've had many conversations with people about this idea of flexible dieting. And those that listen to me and know what's going on, you know, when we reference the term dieting, we're talking about just way of nourishing yourself. We're not talking about losing weight. And I think there's such a huge misconception, right? We hear diet, we automatically can, you know, associate that with weight loss. And as you all know, I hate losing weight. I like releasing weight. Because when we release things, we say goodbye and we never want it back. But when we lose something, oh man, like losing our keys, what do we want to do? We want to find it again. So never lose weight, only release it.
But I very much like that. Yeah.
But actually, something that I love that you say, Lisa, is that food should enrich life, not stress it. And I think this is a good conversation topic because, you know, what are some of those common misconceptions about dieting that you think create unnecessary stress? Can you speak to that a bit? Because I think that's a huge piece for people. Because this, we're talking about energy, and that's all food is. It's energy, right? Take it away. Take it away.
Really, really good point. And I think I've already alluded to my stressors that I was feeling when I had misconceptions, essentially. So I was just being too restrictive. I felt like, for instance, when I was at someone's birthday party, I couldn't have that cake. And if I did have it, after all, I felt guilty. I honestly, it felt like morally guilty because I had attached that moral value to that certain food. And that's absolutely where that relationship with food and the enjoyment of food can stand in our way of enjoying life, I think. So if we release that and just think of, hey, it's all just energy. Of course, some foods are more nutritious than others. Some foods are going to maybe satiate us more than others. But in the end, it's all a bit of a balance. I think that's what really can lead to a very healthy relationship with food. So I think just being too restrictive when it comes to what we're eating is number one. The other misconception when it comes to dieting is often that we have to be too restrictive in the sense of how much we can eat. So especially as women, we tend to be really good at that, at just following like a 1200 or whatever calorie diet for some time until we then binge, because of course it's not sustainable. It's almost like punishing yourself for a little bit, especially at this time of the year, you know, as we're recording this, where it's the second week of January. So maybe people have a little bit of guilt from the holidays. So they think, oh, the less I eat, the better, the more exercise, the better. And both of these things, I have had to learn the hard way that that is not true, because often if we undereat and overexercise, especially at some point, our body is just going to say, nope. No more. We might, you know, break down in one way, shape, or form. If this is adrenal fatigue or whatever you want to label it, or if it's just simply your body not releasing weight anymore because it's learning to be so stubborn. It's like, nope, you're not treating me well. I'm holding on to that lower body fat for my life because it's my main job to keep you surviving. So I think that that would be the second point, in the sense of simply being too restrictive when it comes to the amount of calories. And then probably the third one would be that whole all or nothing thinking, in the sense of, oh, I'm just going to be really, really strict for 5 days. And then I'm going to, you know, let loose completely over the weekend, or even be really, really strict for 6-8 weeks. And then I'm just going to ditch everything for that trip that I'm doing in Cancun or whatever. So I think that honestly, and of course, that doesn't just apply to nutrition, but everything else also. Moderation is the hardest thing for us humans. Like, it's so much easier to compartmentalize and just say, like, I'm on my plan, I'm off my plan. I'm allowed this, I'm not allowed that. But at the end, in my opinion, true contentness and happiness and also best successes are going to happen with moderation. And over time, like, not beating yourself up for a little quote unquote slip up, which is not even a slip up, but, you know, you just eat a little bit more than you had planned potentially. And but at the same time, on the other side, not trying to be perfect and just saying, hey, you know, I'm just going to do something that feels manageable in terms of the deficit, in terms of the healthy foods that I want, but still including maybe a glass of wine here or there or whatever your pleasure is. And just focusing on that moderation piece rather than thinking on and off. I think those would be the three biggest points I'd name.
I, Those are great. Thank you for expanding on that, because you reminded me of there was some really negative PR back in the day on a show called The Biggest Loser. And in its heyday, it was around the 10th or 11th season, there was one lady that won. And it was ridiculous the amount of weight that she released, but also mass muscle loss. And it was crazy restrictive calories, right? Like they were doing like 800 calories a day, but on top of that, training 3 hours a day. Like it's just extreme. And the amount of duress they put on those people, to the point that there was this guy, I don't know if it was LA Times, it's one of the bigger publications in the States. They did a sort of an expose where they went back and talked to all the past contestants. There's like not a single one that hasn't put the weight back.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Or something critical. Like, and they're at the point now where a lot of them have metabolic syndrome, you know, like this issue where the metabolism has become so retarded that it's literally slow. It's like moving like molasses. So this extreme dieting, especially, and this constant, you know, going to these 2 points, like anything, it's like if you experience extremely hot weather and then experience extremely cold weather and you're going this major contrast, and not in a controlled way, right? Controlled fashion, but just ongoing. I mean, our bodies never do well in extremes, you know, they just don't. And so why should dieting be any different, you know? And
100%. I would like to add something in here as well, which please, I think is also aligned with many of the things that you usually speak about. But because this is such an extreme thing, and also because it's a short time frame. So, I mean, they lose, I don't know what, 5, 6, 10 pounds like, a week, or whatever crazy number.
More sometimes. Like the first week's like 40, 50 pound loss, which is a lot of water, of course. But still, regardless, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Not a healthy amount in any case. But I think the other issue aside from the physical point is that you're not giving your mind and your personality the chance to catch up. So like your identity is not going to change because of that. And it's the same. I mean, we hear this over and over. It's like when people win the lottery, many of them, you know, later on are in debt or they're not able to maintain that wealth. And this is the similar thing when it comes to that extreme situation. Of course, they're even also pulled out of their natural environment. They're not with their families. They're not with their friends that encourage them to drink. They're not in their stressful work environment. So then naturally, when they go back to all of that, it's like, okay, who am I in this now? I don't know. I'm just going to go and step back into those old natural patterns that I've had. But if you approach it much more moderately, with much more grace and kindness towards yourself, and you're just like, I'm just going to focus on, you know, changing those little bits here and there, you're going to give your mind, your mentality, the chance to catch up with all the changes that are happening, so that over time, you're actually transforming your identity as well, which then allows you to maintain your success.
Well said. Very well said. I was like spot on, because you're absolutely right. And I mean, in those extreme situations, they're completely in a different environment, but also a lot of the things are done for them, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, of course, if you have that kind of wealth where you can just pay everybody to do everything for you, with the exception, no one can work out for you. But, you know, if they did everything else, I mean, that's awesome. You know, it's, I mean, I think it's good for you, but are you really learning? Are you growing as a human being and, you know, gaining that extra knowledge to be able to sustain it on your own when those support systems aren't there? And I think that's such a valid point and something that we need to consider, you know? So that self-education piece is a big deal long-term. And to be fair, I understand the frustration. There's a lot of misinformation and we see contradictory comments all the time. I mean, Netflix has a new documentary out right now. And the same people that did that one, I mean, there's an underlying bias. It's what they compare to the veganism. But, you know, of course, they've got Stanford. They put Stanford on it to make it look more official. But it's the same people that really have an agenda around veganism, you know? And
oh, yeah. Don't get me started on those Netflix documentaries. Honestly, make me want to pull my hair out.
Well, I think it's good what they're doing. I mean, I love that they're doing the blood work. They're doing all these pieces to be able to show certain things. But I mean, it's a controlled 8-week experiment, right? We're not talking about 8, 10, 20, 30 years of consistency. And so again, it's that sort of extreme, because I'm listening to what you're saying, especially on the flexible dieting, but more importantly, also around that sort of omnivore approach. You know, it's like, gosh, we can consume and digest so many different things, but it's a little bit different for everybody how we respond to
it. Exactly. Yes.
You know, I'd love to ask you a question, Lisa. You know, Because, you know, you've got this background in exercise science. Obviously, you have you really promote healthy living as well in a big way. And especially all the knowledge that you share around nutrition. And I guess, you know, with the premise of the 2% solution, it's all about these little habits that we create and we do regularly to create big changes over time. You know, what do you believe could have a huge impact on someone's overall well-being? You know, like what do you think would be the most significant small change that people could start with?
That is such a tough question, of course, to ask. And because, as you said, of course, it's very dependent on where we're picking that person up from. But I would say if you try to include whole food protein, so meaning something that's not processed, in all of your main meals, I have no doubt that your diet, your body, your mind is going to be better off later on. Of course, there is many things we can layer on top of that. Just generally, as I was hinting to, 80% whole foods in general, or not drinking your calories. I think that that's actually a big one too, because also that includes alcohol, that includes sugary coffee, that includes lots of things like that, sodas and so on. But I think if you make that your goal to include whole food protein, I'm saying whole food protein because in my opinion, that would exclude things like hot dogs or, you know, processed meats and those things. If you instead focus on maybe chicken breasts and eggs and some beef, or if you are inclined to be plant-based, you know, make it some tofu, granted that is processed, but still things like that. If you focus on having that in your main meals, you're going to be more satiated, you're going to eat less of the other crap, and you're definitely doing your body something good on many, many levels.
So thank you for bringing that up, because I think that, especially as it relates to nutrition changes, I know that's a big part of our conversation today, that the protein piece is like often like the one little piece that is actually one of the easiest. And to be fair, a lot of us, I mean, I like eating protein, you know, especially when it comes from a whole food source, because I do feel satiated. I get this nice sustained energy. I don't get the blood sugar spikes and dips, you know? And, 100%. So I appreciate that. Now I know there is a big question and everyone sort of thinks, well, how much? Okay. There is such a debate around this, Lisa. I want to hear your thoughts on that. All right. So, how much protein, especially on a per day basis, like what should people be really shooting for? And of course you can give them a range. I think that's even better than a formula we got to memorize, right?
Well, I would say if you're pretty new to nutrition and you're just trying to clean your diet up a little bit, I would say something as simple as if you're a female, something like a palm sized portion of protein in terms of, you know, chicken or eggs or so, that's a good start for a meal. Definitely a full handful or two palm-sized portions or so. If you're actually interested in tracking macros, or you have been tracking macros or so, overall, I just like to keep things simple. And therefore, I still say about a gram of goal body weight. So not necessarily your current body weight, but your goal body weight, I would say you're definitely on the safe side with that. If you can't quite get there and you want a more specific number, like something like 0.8 times goal body weight is also fine. If you really enjoy protein, you can go higher than that. 1.2 grams or so per pound of goal body weight, or even pound of current body weight, is fine too. But I think that that's a really good aim. Ideally, we want to spread that, as I was saying, we want to spread that out relatively evenly throughout the day, just for those steady blood sugar levels. And that's really the main one, not even necessarily in the sense of protein, muscle protein synthesis, but in my opinion, more because of the blood sugar levels.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And just to sort of surmise on that, I love that equation, that sort of 0.8 to 1.2 grams per pound. And I love that you do talk about the goal weight. I used to figure out people's lean weight and then recommend based around that. And then, of course, based on their goals, increase or decrease, you know, but
yes, that's definitely a good recommendation. Also, I think people just sometimes have a hard time knowing what their own lean body mass is.
Yes.
So in terms of simplicity, I just always like to keep things simple. If we think goal body weight, you're on the safe side with that.
Yeah. And I love the analogy and or just the commentary around just using your hand for sizing charts. Like in my book, I've got a little picture of a chart around that, you know, and like even including the fat, which so many people, I grew up during the time when there was this massive no fat campaign, you know, and I mean, it really shifted the worldview on nutrition and it really screwed a lot of people up. I look at the health conditions today that are lifestyle conditions, especially a lot of them stem from poor nutrition value. And it's not like people are starving. People are actually, it's the full opposite of the spectrum. It's just the type of calories that they're feeding themselves, unfortunately, is creating a lot of harm and these lifestyle issues. So where I was going with this is I wanted to get your thoughts on just nutrition, like for yourself when it comes to sources. Because of course, you know, I'm going to suggest that people follow you because it's good, trusted resource. You're someone that works in this field, but also you're a participant. Like you're actively doing this. You walk the talk. And I stress this, okay? I stress this so much when people are looking for a coach or a mentor, someone to work with, to help them. Make sure the people that actually practice what they preach, you know? And I know this is something you're very passionate about. So I love that, you know? I absolutely love it because I work the same way. And what would you say outside of obviously your own content, but what's a good trusted resource for people nowadays? Like, is there a couple websites that you rely on or trust to have good, solid information? Because I know people are always wondering, because self-education is good, but I mean, you go on YouTube and you start typing in stuff, you're going to get 20 different opinions. You know, it's like, what's what? And so I'm just curious about your thoughts for resources.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I generally would always say, never, no matter when it comes to your finances or whatever else, nutrition, never just rely on one resource. Like even in terms of, you know, following me, I would not recommend that someone just follows me. But, you know, expand your horizon and listen to multiple people. And of course, if you have their information overlapping, that's probably a good sign that they're, you know, that there's some truth to it potentially, especially if they're quote unquote evidence-based. I do very much like the information that Dr. Andy Galpin is putting out. He is more in the exercise science space. And now when it comes to like health information, I also like what Dr. Peter Attia is putting out. That's very much in terms of longevity, heart health as well. Then another one would be Dr. Lane Norton. He is more in the sense of debunking, especially things like false information out there, but very, very much from an evidence point of view. So I would say those three are good resources for women. Also, looking at someone like Dr. Stacey Sims or Dr. Lyon, I forgot her name, Gabriel Lyon, they put out great information also, especially for the time of perimenopause and menopause. So those would be, you know, five people that I'd recommend. And again, when you listen to their content, you might find some things overlapping or just generally a common theme. And that's what I would go and run with.
Those are great resources. Amazing. I mean, I think I follow all the same. You know, so I'm going to make sure I include those links. Thanks. I mean, for people that are listening, those are going to be trusted resources, but the amount of information you're going to get and learn is sometimes it can be a bit overwhelming. So I would say take it in small chunks. Okay. It's, and as we all know, like I really encourage people every day, non-negotiable personal development time. So if you're setting aside at least 10 minutes to just feed your mind, that's when you go consume some of that content, right? Love it. It's a little bit by day. And, I got to ask you. So you have got this philosophy I've seen you talk about where you're talking about not settling for a mediocre life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love how you sort of frame it. But yeah, I know this is going to be new to a lot of the individuals that are listening to you for the first time. So if there's somebody that's feeling stuck, you know, and it's that sort of normalized feeling, you know what I mean? Like it's just been so standard. I mean, some people equate it to like, I feel like I'm in a rut, right? So there's no choices. You're stuck on this path, but that becomes our normal. Yeah. But there's somebody that yearns for more than the normal or the tradition or the status quo of their life, the rut. What's your piece of advice for them? Or what's your thoughts for supporting them to start making some changes?
So first of all, I have 100% been in that exact same place. I thought I have you know, I have a nice husband, I have a decent job, I have a reasonable income, and it's all pretty stable. Why am I unhappy? Why am I hating going to work? Why do I think this marriage is kind of boring, or he's kind of annoying, etc.? And is it normal? And then, of course, you hear things, or you hear people talking about these things where it's like, oh, it's normal to, you know, only look forward to Friday night and basically live Friday night to Sunday. And it's normal that after a few years of marriage, there's nothing there anymore. And you basically are happy when the other person leaves the house, etc. And then at some point, I started with more of this self-development work, in the sense of really listening to other people that have gone through transformations of feeling that way into living an abundant life, into tapping into their full potential. Because I just felt like, again, life has to be enjoyed in some way, shape, or form. And I can contribute in so many more ways than just doing what I was doing. And that led me to, yeah, really also scheduling more time for myself, as you were saying, in terms of going inside and figuring out, what do I actually want? I think that's where it should start, or where it needs to start. Like, what are your values and what do you actually want? Because in my opinion, the reason why many people never or don't live the life of their dreams is because they don't define what their dream truly is. They just have that feeling within them where they're like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, this is not quite right. I'm not enjoying this, but I don't really know what else I would want, kind of thing. So once you get super clear on what you actually want, it becomes easier to backtrack that and just be like, okay, what do I need to do in order to do that? And for me, it was things like quitting my job. It was things like moving away and just, you know, having that freedom there. And so, yeah, I think that my number one advice would be, don't let anyone tell you that that is what your life is supposed to look like just because everyone around you is unhappy. Don't settle. You have so much more potential, because if you have that feeling within you, you have the potential. Otherwise, you wouldn't be questioning that. That's simply the answer. And number two, get clear on what you actually want. And some of those answers you're going to find along the way. It's not like suddenly on day one where you sit down for 5 minutes and go within, you have like, oh, okay, here are the 10 points that I want to achieve by the end of my life. It's much more, you know, transformative, and over the course of time, it's going to reshape. But still, figuring out those first few steps, even if it's scary, do it. It's so worth it. It's so, so worth it.
That, yeah, I agree. Because when we feel clear, we feel confident. When we feel confident, we take more action. You know, it's amazing how that works. And so that clarity of getting to the nut of, well, what do I really want? And what you said about, you know, living the life that you want, not the life that others expect of you. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the top five regrets of the dying.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, let's learn from people that say that at end of life. It's like, why should we, you know, feel the same way at end of life? They're telling us, they're giving us the clues to be successful with this, right? But it takes work to get to that clarity. And I think that's the hard part, right? It's just sustaining that energy to keep moving forward, which is why I think you and I both agree on this. You got to get your house right first. And what I mean by that is, you got to get yourself in a good place before you can really start thinking about some of the bigger picture ideas. Like, are you healthy? You know, how are the quality of your relationships? How's your sleep every night? You know, how much water you drink a day? Like, basic. But it's the basics that create the foundation, you know? And if you're not doing the basics right or very well, I mean, come on. You can't have these huge expectations for yourself or get disappointed with yourself if you don't see things progressing the way you want. You know, and I like to let people know that, because give yourself some grace. You know, be a bit more flexible 100%. With yourself, right? It's like,
yeah, I was just going to add a couple of points to that.
So yeah, please.
If you don't do the right things, and I would add to that, if you don't do them consistently, what I have seen, not just when it comes to nutrition, but literally everything across life, moderation is not just one of the words that I really like. I also love the word consistency. So I think, you know, with that clarity thing, with that going within, I would recommend doing 2-3 minutes per day, every single day, rather than every now and then doing 20 minutes or half an hour. It's going to take you much further. It's going to impact your day-to-day living much more. The other thing I was going to add, because you mentioned the quality of relationships, be clear that it's going to be normal that through that transformation, breaking out of that quote-unquote normal life, you're going to lose people. And that's going to be A, required for it, and B, just a part of it. And that's okay. Some people are just meant to be in your life for a short amount of time or a certain amount of time. But you can't expect, and I'm sure we've all heard that, but you can't expect to see change or feel change if you're not actually making any changes to the things that matter the most, which is your environment and the people that you live with. And the third thing I was going to add is that it truly, as you mentioned, we sometimes need to give ourselves that true permission to break out of that norm, because I just felt a little bit guilty even subconsciously, and it took me a while to uncover that, but just thinking, why should I deserve to live that life of my dream when so many other people don't, when the majority of people is overweight, unhappy, whatever, like what entitled me to do that? But the truth is we all have that permission. We just need to give it to ourselves. And most people, again, they just settle for, unfortunately, the footsteps that are laid out in front of them instead of creating their own path.
Yes. And also, back to the relationship piece, which you were saying, because I know this is what you were alluding to, is as you change that sphere, that tight first circle, because most people, and I would say like this is more evident than it isn't evident, is the people you spend the most amount of time with, you tend to be very much like them, okay, or them like you. And so if you're hanging around a bunch of people with unhealthy habits and negative thought patterns, and they like just the normal, but they like to complain about the normal, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I live in it, but I'm just going to complain about it all day, but I'm not going to do anything to change it.
Yep.
I just like to complain about it. You have to be able to break through that cycle if you expect to see the change. And I think that's just such an important point. And I know there's always people on the other line, well, look, it's my family. Yeah, it's tough. But don't worry. Unconditional love is good. Okay. They're still going to love you. You're going to love them, but you might have to agree to disagree, And I know that's the hardest one, right? And as you mentioned, like even those significant relationships, I see this a lot with partners, because I always try to encourage, I'll get a spouse to come to me, and then their spouse, their partner, life partner may not be as supportive or not being willing to make the changes. And then as soon as you see one person make the changes, it's like these two ships going different directions and we grow apart. And that can be
Yes.
I'm sure you see this a lot, right?
I see that a lot in nutrition, but of course in any other transformation in life. And I would say that often the first instinct, usually subconsciously, of the other person that is not changing is to try and pull you down to their love back.
Sabotage, yeah.
Exactly. It's like you've decided to go on a diet. Next day, your partner brings home a pizza and your favorite treat type of thing.
Yeah.
But I would say, number one, communication around that is going to be, of course, super helpful. If you say like, hey, I want to improve my health. This has nothing to do with you. I don't expect you to make the same health choices. You can still have this and that. Maybe it would be great if you don't hold the pizza under my nose while you're eating it, because it does smell good. But, I don't expect you to make the same cuts, number one. But more importantly, telling them also that you still love them and it has nothing to do with them. I think often them trying to pull us back down is their subconscious fear of losing us. Because of course, if you change, then they're afraid that they're no longer good enough. So it doesn't have to be though that you fully grow apart, because eventually maybe it takes your partner longer, but maybe they go on their own journey and maybe you can evolve, parallel somewhat, not necessarily together, but parallel. As long as you're still like showing each other the love and respect that you deserve and in other ways. Of course, they do need to realize that you're going to change. I think most of the time when people tell us, oh, you've changed, it has this negative connotation of you're no longer the person that I thought you were. But we need to reframe that in our mind as actually something good, especially if you're someone who is striving for self-development and self-improvement. there's nothing nice to than hearing you've changed, in my opinion, because it truly means you're doing something right. Right? You're no longer the person that you were 2 years ago, that you were 5 years ago, etc. So yeah, I guess my main point here would be open communication with the partner and just realizing if they're trying to pull you down, they're just afraid of losing you. So maybe just reassuring them on a regular basis that you're not running away from them. You're just wanting to get the most out of, you know, who you are.
Great points. And it's interesting. You sort of reminded me, I've seen this happen in the past where one person wants to make a change and they go to their partners. And it's kind of weird, right? They want to share that they're excited about wanting to make this change, but it's like they're seeking permission to do it. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's reframing that. It's like, you never want to go to your partner and ask for permission to make an improvement in what's going to be better for your, both your lives, your happiness, quality of life. Like, it's not a matter of permission. But it is a matter of support.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important when couples start to have these conversations and one person gets vulnerable and expresses their desire to make a change, is that they're, in doing that, they're actually seeking for support. They want their partner support to help them navigate that, to support them through those changes. But it's interesting because a lot of relationship dynamics make us feel like we need to ask for permission to do it. And so I always invite people to think about that when you are having those kind of vulnerable interactions. It's like, are you thinking, even yourself as the person asking, are you looking for someone's permission to do it? Because it shouldn't matter. You know, it's your life partner. They want you to be happy. Okay. At the end of the day, at least that's what we say when we make those little promises to each other, you know, often those vows. And so it's a matter of trying to stay that course. I think, you know, you speak so well to this. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that today, Lisa. And I can't believe how quickly time flies. And you know, I'm going to throw in a couple more questions, but I know then we're going to have to wrap it up, you know, But don't worry, everyone. If you've loved this conversation with Lisa and you want to see her back, because I think I really want to have her back. I mean, we, you know, tip the iceberg stuff here. Make sure you leave some comments, shoot us a note, tell us how much you like the episode, and I'll be sure to get her back if she's willing to come back.
My pleasure.
Okay. You heard it there. Okay. So I should have checked with her first, but good. I don't have to edit that out. So okay. Let's talk about, I don't know what's the best way to put this, but all right, let's just say right now there's a lot of myths in nutrition. Okay. And fitness, like there's a ton, no pain, no gain, right? Like there's some old cliches, but those were at one point believed to be true. And that was the way. And, you know, is there a couple nutrition or fitness myths that you would love to debunk today, or at least share with our audience, you know, so maybe to help them reframe some of those underlying beliefs that they may not be aware that is actually just a myth?
Yeah, I guess the first one still goes back to that, the point that I was making earlier in terms of my recommendation, and that is with regards to protein. I think there was and still is a common misconception that it's going to affect your kidneys negatively, even at the level of, you know, about a gram per pound of body weight or goal body weight. And there's literally no evidence, or on the contrary, there is a lot of evidence that this is not true. And that unless you have a pre-existing kidney condition, it is absolutely safe. And all the other health benefits, especially if it helps you attain healthy body fat levels, and, you know, a proper muscle mass, et cetera, they're going to way outweigh anything that could potentially have anything to do with your kidney. So that would be the first one. And then more broadly speaking, and this is just more going towards your female audience probably, is that strength training doesn't make you bulky. It does not make you bulky. Unless you're like specifically aiming to get really big, or you're trying to become a bodybuilder or whatever, you're training that way and potentially helping out with some illegal substances. And, you know, most people or most women that try to put on muscle mass, they would probably be happy if that was the case. But I have been strength training for about 10 years now. And I don't believe that I'm bulky. I'm probably more muscly than most women are. But in general, I would not consider myself bulky. And so I can only, again, also from that perspective, encourage you to engage in strength training, because the benefits are way going to outweigh anything where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get big because of that and manly and whatever, have a dark, deeper voice and grow some facial hair. This is not going to be the case.
Thank you for sharing that, because it's true. It's like crazy. I still run up against that when I first start having conversations with some of my female clients, you know, is that there's always that concern. Oh, I can't do too much weight, so I'll get big. And I'm like, yeah, it takes a lot of work to put muscle on. A lot of work. But it is a sign of health and resiliency. I mean, we see this as people age, and decrepitude is something we're all fighting against, you know, especially when it comes to health spans. And as soon as you start losing muscle mass as you age, not a good sign. Your metabolism slows down, your energy slows down, your resiliency to illness slows down. Like, it's just, it's a slippery slope. So strength training is critical for quality of life long term, especially as we get older. So thank you, Lisa, for sharing that and busting that myth again. I'd like to have one more question with you, okay, today, because obviously we're going to have you back to talk more. But if you could leave our listeners, you know, with one message to carry with them away from today's conversation, what would you like to leave them with?
I would, instead of making it a sentence, I'm going to give you the three words to focus on. So number one was moderation that I spoke about. When you think of anything, think of, okay, how can I just be more moderate with that? And number two would be consistency. How can I be consistent with what I'm doing, whether that's my strength training, whether it's my going within period, whether it's my protein intake, my food quality. And then the third one would be clarity and focus on what you actually want. So what you want in life, but also what you want your days to look like, what you want your relationships to look like, who you want to be, just clarity in general.
You're awesome. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure. Absolutely.
Oh, well, thank you. Honestly, it's been an honor to host you. I know we've been playing tag for months, quite literally, and to try to get the right time zone lined up, get the technology working. Because where are you calling from today? We didn't even talk about that.
I'm in Colombia, in Bogota, in the capital of Colombia at the moment. So I'm, as you were saying, nomading around, but this is my current base.
Rub it in. Well, that's wonderful. And as mentioned, connecting with Lisa online is very simple. I'm not going to speak for you, but if people were going to connect with one social channel to really start to get to know you, learn from you, connect with you, what would be the best platform for them to do that?
Instagram is definitely where I'm most active. So nutrition coaching and life on there. We do have a website, Facebook group, etc. But I would direct them towards Instagram.
Great. And don't worry, all those links to all of Lisa's assets will be in the show notes. Please, if you like today's episode, let Lisa know. Let her know. Go to her profile. Send her a DM and say thank you. Because honestly, it's guests like her that help all of us. They come on these shows, they give their wisdom bombs, their advice, their love, their support freely, because it's part of their life mission is to help people. Okay. Like Lisa told you, she's been on the other side of the fence. She's now on the other one, and she's looking at everybody that's on the other side of the fence, wanting to help them get over. So I respect you greatly. Thank you for coming on the show again today, Lisa. And I can't wait to have you back.
Same here. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Wow, what a ride we had today with Lisa. Her journey and insights are a testament to the power of embracing change and stepping into a life of freedom as well as fulfillment. Lisa reminds us that breaking free from old patterns and daring to live differently isn't just possible. It's the pathway to truly thriving. Her story is a beacon of anyone feeling stuck in a rut, showing us that with the right mindset and a pinch of courage, we can transform our lives. For those of you inspired by Lisa's journey and eager to take your first steps towards a more liberated life, be sure to follow her journey on Instagram. As well, let Lisa guide you through the twists and turns of transforming not just how you eat, but how you live. Share this episode with someone who needs to hear this message. Leave us a review if you love today's convo. And don't forget to subscribe for more inspiring stories like Lisa's. Here's to making those small changes that lead to big transformations. Keep pushing the boundaries, one 2% shift at a time. See you in the next episode.